Now it's Gory H of West Hollywood. The script didn't need it to refresh it. So a different Gordy, that was last month.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Gordy, and I'm not in Washington. I am literally 5 minutes from the West Hollywood Recovery Center, actually. I live like 10-minute walk from where I actually started an Al-Anon meeting at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoons. And it's a great building. It's a great service to our community. We're very lucky to have it. And I'm just honored that I was asked to speak and share with you today. It's good to see everybody. I'm very grateful. I hope this doesn't go all over the place, but I will tell you that I don't take care of myself very well because I grew up in the shadow of alcoholism, and I often put everybody else needs first, and it makes me comfortable to go last and let everybody else get theirs. And for some reason I get a very awkward sense of satisfaction from that, but it's not really a good plan for life. You end up feeling pretty brokenhearted and wanting and pretty sad. So one of the things that I had a cat for 14 years. I love the cat. Cat passed away 20 years ago. I named my business after the cat, and the cat lives on. Everybody who knew me that time knew this cat. It was this like amazing cat. And it took me like 10 years to even think about getting another cat because I was just so, I don't know. It just, and in only in the last 5 years, I really, really, really started to be like, I want another cat. But I don't think I can get one because I don't think the person that manages my apartment will let me. I read that in the lease. And took me a long time to even ask him because I would see other animals in the building. You know? And it was sort of the, hey, he's like, yeah, sure. I don't know how many years that took just for me to ask if it was okay. And then the last couple years, it's just been always something. Well, I'm going to travel. Oh, my work. I don't know if I can get them now. And, you know, but always wanting to have, this is going to make me really emotional. And then the pandemic hit and it was sort of like everybody wanted a cat. Everybody wanted a dog, you know. And they're all running out in LA, actually, because everybody's like, I need somebody here in my house, some living creature. And I tried to do that. It was very difficult remotely. And I said, I'm just going to wait until it's over. And then it got to be over. And then I got, you know, vaccinated, not to, you know, get too specific, but basically, you know, I'm getting... So then it's like, okay, now are you going to get kittens, right? And I just saw you, Nancy. It's good to see you, Nancy. Somebody, a friend of mine, texted me a picture. Her friend had 3 kittens. I was like, I'll take 2 of them. You know, I'm trying to be really willing. I'm like, I want cats. You know, and then they're like, well, you have to apply. Da, da, da. And I was like, no, I want to be able to see the cats. So a week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago, I started a meeting beginning of the pandemic. It's on Sunday night. Someone, I turn it on, somebody who does the Zoom host, literally picks up 2 little kittens and puts them in the screen. It's like, look at these kittens. And I'm like, I'll take those. And she goes, well, I live in Sacramento. And I was like, I don't care. And I was like, I am not going to come up with another excuse for giving me what I want. I'm not going to sideline myself another time. And people were like, Gord, there's like cats all over LA. And I'm like, I don't want to hear it anymore. I'm going to Sacramento. And I drove all the way. And she goes, you know, I actually live about an hour north of Sacramento. I don't care. So like last Wednesday, I drove up to Sacramento, 7 hours, folks. And people in California, that's not, you know, that's going like, that's like going to In and Out, you know, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything. Around the country, you know, that's like long. It's long for us. 7 hours is long. People, when I tell people you go to Sacramento, they go, okay, that's a little, that's further than In and Out. And got the cats, brought them back. So now I have, they're sleeping right over here on this little pillow. See them over there? I have these two little baby kittens. They're like 6 weeks old. And I haven't been able to sleep very well. The last couple nights has been really good. But I'm telling you, I'm just like, they're on me. Like, and I was trying to meditate. I was meditating before the meeting, kind of get myself centered, and they crawl up and they get right on top of me, falling asleep. And I'm like literally doing 11th step with these kittens, you know, and I am, so I'm just sort of beside myself, and it's cracking me open, you guys, because I realize it's like I finally did something just for Gordy, just for me. And I have been in Al-Anon for 16 years and I work hard in Al-Anon, but it still is something that sort of stretches me to say, enough being responsible for everybody else's happiness, enough giving to everybody else and you being last. Like, there has to be better balance. And so it is such a gift to finally, you know, start this process of, you know, continue this process of like, but this is a real watershed thing for me to finally do this for myself. So I told that story because they might wake up and then start crawling all over me, and then it will become like a funny lead. So please forgive me if it becomes like the annoying cat guy lead or whatever. So, but that's where I'm at. You know, and it has taken me a lot of recovery, and I still am working on what's best for Gordy. You know, there's a photograph of my grandmother, whose parents were born in my family on my mother's side is from Cork, Ireland, and my father's family is originally from Germany. And there's a picture of my grandmother when she was a young woman, and she had 14 brothers and sisters, Irish family, early 20th century, black and white photo. And she looks just so pretty. She's sitting in the front of the thing. But if you look at all of her brothers, they all, and it's like in the, it's out in sort of a field or something, and it's taken at daytime, and you can see the alcoholism, because half of the guys look drunk and the other half look like they woke up and they want to be drunk, and they all look very bedraggled, and you can see clearly, you know, the effects of the disease. My father's father was probably had a drinking problem. His mother was mentally ill and died at the age I am now. And my mother's father was such a horrible alcoholic, or something was going on, that my grandmother took the five children out of the house in the middle of the night when my mother was 3 years old, and walked them down the street out of the house. So something was so bad. And my mother saw her biological father one more time when she was 12 at a movie theater, but she never saw him again, and he was an alcoholic. You know, I came into Al-Anon and I blamed my parents for so much. I don't know about you guys, but I really blamed my family for my problems. And one of the greatest, beautiful things is the relief and the awareness I've gotten in Al-Anon that my parents grew up in alcoholic families that were worse than mine. And to have that compassion for them and realize it's like, how can I pick on my father anymore, knowing what he went through? You know, at the age of 30, having to identify his mother's body and, you know, from a suicide or something happened, you know, there might have been foul play. It's just, you know, it's something that's hung over our family, hung over my father. And then, you know, and then my mother as well, just this sort of broken family. And, but they got together and had kids, you know, and my father drank. He's an admitted alcoholic. He's been dry now for 20 years. He went to AA a little bit, but, that's his business. But he definitely was, he's an alcoholic. He says he's an alcoholic. And he was actively drinking when I was, growing up in our home, you know, and there was just a ton of neglect. You know, the alcoholic marriage, alcoholism just robs time. You know, it just takes everybody's bandwidth, you know, and, it's just my unrecovered Al-Anon will make me just spin all day long and I won't do my laundry or I won't take care of myself at all. Let alone, can you imagine having four children and trying to parent children and also be in and having your spouse be drinking and having your spouse be an unrecovered? My mom was not in Al-Anon. So she's trying to fix him and he's trying to drink or whatever. And they have four kids and they were fighting a lot. There was a lot of yelling. And it's hard, you know. I mean, I'm a sensitive boy. Probably I'm still sensitive, you know. I think we're all sensitive. It's not, I mean, that's normal. We're human. We're supposed to be sensitive. It's not like we're more sensitive. It's just that, you know, that little boy that was like, hey, two or two and a half or three or four, and then the yelling and the neglect and then the sense of like, is there something I did? You know, and getting confused and wanting and seeing people are unhappy and they're crying and they're yelling. And then you're like, how can I make them feel better? You know, and I became very funny. I'm like a funny guy. My sort of sense of humor came from trying to like entertain my older sister, make people stop fighting, distract them or something. You know, I was like a terrible student in school because I was just joke, 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 joke. I wanted the attention on me. A lot of it came from the neglect, you know, wanting, you know, I'm like a big, I don't know about you guys, but I'm like a you know, my sponsor says it's Al-Anon, not On-Anon. And I'm a big On-Anon guy where I keep talking. And, you know, it's like, if you let me talk, I'll just keep going and going because I want someone to listen to me and pay attention to me. And I have to be very careful about like, hey, dude, you can shut up now, you know, and let somebody else talk. Try and focus on somebody else. They're here. They love you. But when I was a kid, it was like, you know, they were completely enmeshed. And and then you know, trying to solve that problem and the yelling. So there's a lot of hiding. There's a lot of checking out. There was a lot of, and definitely, you know, the damage to the esteem was profound. So they separated. I was about 13. And then they kind of went off and my mom went off and did her thing. And my father moved not too far away, but he just went and kind of tried to deal with himself. So it got real quiet. Like the yelling had stopped. But the neglect got even sort of worse. It was like I was just sort of a latchkey. There was no interest. There was something very profound, the effect of the disease, when the parents are not interested in the child. I actually, you know, I came into Al-Anon, I was about ready to turn 40. And I, you know, I'll just tell you this story, you know, like I, you know, would spill stuff on my clothes, you know, often when I was eating. You know, I always ate and I'd end up with like mustard on my shirt, or it happened to me all the time, like spilling stuff. And I thought it was because I was an artist. I thought it was because I was creative. I was like a mad genius. And I had dirty clothes and I didn't shave or I didn't know how to tie a tie because I was a genius. I was artistic. I was different. I was unique. And I came and I realized that no, that's because there was no one to show me how to eat with a spoon. It was like all of a sudden the romance kind of went away. It was like, no. No one taught you how to, no one showed you how to shave. And I'm telling you, I say this with love. My father was strangled by an incurable illness. Okay. He's, you know, so I'm not pointing any fingers, but that's some of the effects, the minutiae, the sort of the neglect is that, you know, I remember watching, I was at a table with my younger sister and she has five children and they're all eating dinner and they have dinner every night together. And the young boy is like 7 or 8. He says something at the table. You know, I don't know what he said, some goofy word or something. And she said, you know, we don't say that at the table. Okay. And there was just that little course correction, you know, that little like, Hey, slow down with the spoon. You know, just a little help, a little parenting. And when you get that course correction, when you get the parenting, you also get the esteem behind that. You get the value. You get the sense of like, somebody loves me. I have another friend who's got a 12 and a 14-year-old, and she's got to like control their internet use and all this stuff. And they're sort of like always kind of like, but the fact is that they know their mother is like involved and they're not, they might be like wrestling with her, but they're like, they know that she knows that they're there. And it's just impactful. And so I'm just trying to describe how the alcoholism affected me. I grew up in the shadow of alcoholism, folks. And that's what happened. You know, there was a lot of pain from the fighting and then they separated and then there was more neglect. And so I sort of stumbled out into the world, you know, and went off to college and things. And I started to look, you know, so there was like, I didn't know how to take care of myself. I had a damaged esteem. So, you know, and I often found myself chasing, you know, a sense of comfort in other people, controlling other people. You know, I just always was in other people's business. All of that stuff, my focus on others was a way to keep my focus off of my own injury, my own emotional discomfort of being affected by the disease. And just like the sort of self-loathing and the self-critical feelings that I had, the noise that I had about myself. So it's real easy to like sort of ignore that and sort of push down that if one, I get someone to like be my girlfriend or something like that. And that's sort of like all of a sudden I feel like, oh, I'm not a broken toy. And, you know, please don't leave and let me hold on to your leg and drive you crazy until you run away from me at top speed. I mean, you know, I thought I was like, you know, oh, I'm picking all these unavailable people. No, they're, you're driving them all crazy and they're running away from you. you, you know, because you're not really loving them. It was all sick. It was me using other people to treat my injury, to treat what happened to me, make myself feel good, put it all back together. So me gossiping, me controlling, me dictating, me not minding my own business, all of that stuff, it's all, that was my solution to my feelings of self-loathing and the damage, you know, from being around the disease. So, you know, so anyways, yeah, I took someone asked me, they said, oh, my friend is using cocaine. You know, my roommate's using cocaine and it's driving me crazy. And I was like, well, you should go to an Al-Anon meeting. I had been to some Al-Anon before. I had been to some ACA before, but it never stuck. You know, I usually went there after I'd had some sort of a relationship blow up or something. And I kind of, my brother was an alcoholic. He actually died of an overdose 7 years ago. And so I knew about 12, I knew, you know, about Al-Anon, right? And I took her there and I remember sitting in the meeting and realizing it's like, and I, you know, I'm like taking her, oh, you need to be here, you know? And then realizing it's like, I was, you know, it was 2004. And it was over on Yucca and Gower, that Saturday meeting. I remember sitting there and it suddenly hitting me like, oh, I think I need to do this work. And you know, I wasn't completely in. And then something happened August 8th, 2004. It just happened the night before. I basically just opened my mouth and said something unfiltered to a group of people. And it was really embarrassing. Like I was also the guy who would say weird shit and everyone would be like, oh God, you know, like awkward stuff. And again, I would attribute that to be just like, oh, that's just Gordy. He's crazy. He's funny. He's a truth teller. You know, I had a bunch of bullshit reasons why that kind of to describe my weird, oh, you know, well, you know how all those things we say about unfiltered speech. And again, that was the lack of parenting, you know, the lack, you know, you don't get a filter when someone's at the kitchen table and says, maybe not, don't say that when we're all eating. But if no one says that, you know, you grow up and you're immature, you know, you're like this and my apartment and everything. So that happened. And then I went to a meeting. I'd already asked this guy to be my sponsor. And I called him after the meeting. I went to Las Palmas on Sunday. It's over in Hollywood. And I called him and I was like at a point of surrender. And for me, folks, surrender, I need to keep surrendering. You know, it'll be 17 years in August since I really gave up my surrender date or whatever. And I need to keep, this is what happened with the cats. You know, it's like, I want to keep growing. My recovery has to be progressive. I have to keep working on this. I'm still recovering everything that I sort of lost. And I have to maintain this vigilance so that I can keep improving myself and keep becoming and be healthier and happier. You know, avoid suffering, you know, what it says, you know, in the detachment pamphlet, it's just like, you know, I don't want to suffer. You know, I can feel pain or loss, but I don't want to suffer. So I got a sponsor. How much time do I have? About 20 minutes? 15? 20 minutes? Okay, great. Thank you. I got a sponsor, and he had been in Alan. He was about 40. He was about my age, and he'd been coming since he'd been in Alateen. So I really wanted someone with some time And, but I was done, you guys. Al-Anon works, okay? And we just do certain things here. We go to a ton of meetings. We do the steps. We get a sponsor. We do service commitments. We hang out with our fellows, and that's what we do. And it's very powerful. It's been in my experience is that Al-Anon is very powerful. And if I want to feel better, I do more Al-Anon. If things are kind of going or something, I need to go to more meetings. I need to look at my service commitments. I need to go like, well, what step am I on? Or, you know, like, where's my book? Like, what is it? What was I doing? What am I doing? And do more of it. Did I read the readers today? You know, like, where was my meditation today? And that's where I started. I was in complete surrender. I was that morning, August 8th, 2004. I didn't know who I was. I was like, why do I say things that make people not want to be around me? Like, why can't I shut my mouth? Who am I? I was in a state of total bewilderment. I did not know what was going on. And I was just swirling with resentments. And I was everybody had done something to me. I'd been screwed over by my parents. You know, they didn't focus on me. They focused on my siblings, not me. You know, whatever the narrative was, it was not my responsibility. And so I was like, what are you guys doing? I'll do it. And I started to go to a meeting every day, totally surrendered. So if you are, you know, I always, you know, I say like the disease, my disease tells romantic, convoluted, dramatic stories. You know, drama queen is like, you know, I contributed to that creation of that phrase probably, you know, and it's like drama is like unrecovered. Recovery is boring, not boring. It's simple. It's dry. There's no drama. It's straightforward. You just go to meetings. You get a sponsor. You work the steps. You help other people. And you have a relationship with a higher power. That's what it is. It's not dramatic. My unrecovered. So I was like, what do you want me to do? And I just started to go to meetings. And I couldn't share. I didn't want to share. So if you feel uncomfortable not sharing, that's totally fine. You see other people sharing, you're like, I don't want to share yet. It's okay. I didn't share primarily because of my ego, because I didn't know. I wanted to know what to say. And then I had another like bottom and I was like, I need to share at the next meeting. I need to start again. It was like, you need to do more. You need to start like sharing. You're trying to control this, but you're not giving up. Right. And I was like, they needed people to answer phones at central office. So I was like, okay, I'll do that. That sounds great. And I went to central office and I answered phones on Friday afternoons for probably a year and a half. And I was able to listen to the disease coming in, not really know half the time how to deal with it. And the manager and the other staff person there had been there and dealt with all this stuff. And I, you know, I would go and get the literature. I learned about what the literature was. I started to do the do's and don'ts. I started to read just for today. I would read the readers every single day. Okay. Self-care, which is all over our literature of the do's and don'ts just for today, the detachment pamphlet, all of it suggests self-care. So I started to buy myself clothes. I started to go to Goodwill because I had like two pairs of pants that my mom had probably given me for Christmas. I didn't know how to buy clothes for myself. I didn't go to a doctor. I didn't go to a dentist. My apartment was dirty. It was like I was a 12-year-old who was emotionally disturbed, and my apartment was like a fort. You know, that's what it was like. So I started a year like, practice self-care, service commitments, going out to fellowship with people, calling other men, outreaching with people, calling people for outreach. All of that stuff built my esteem back. It's like when you wear a nice shirt and you get a nice haircut and you know, like I'm the guy that is like, it feels really uncomfortable if I stay at a hotel that's not the worst one on the website. I got to stay at the cheapest one, right? Because that's like, so if I cheap, oh God, that's so. But me buying myself an actual pair of new sneakers, not like a crazy like shopping thing or just literally getting up to sea level. I remember when I got a car, I had an Al-Anon car that had nothing worked on it, didn't have AC or anything. That was the car that I had when I walked in. And when I finally, 2 years in, leased a new car, which was pretty much sea level, I started looking on the 101, like everybody else on the, I realized all the other cars don't have dents in them either. You know, I was like, I just noticed, I was like, most everybody on the 101 is driving a car that looks like fairly good condition, you know? And this was all this stuff, folks, all came hand in hand. Calling my sponsor, working the blueprint. You know, I started to write, you know, work that four step, be of service at central office, buy myself a new shirt. All of that stuff started to like make myself feel better about me. It was the process of starting to love me and to treat me the way I was trying to treat everybody else. Everybody else was first. And I was finally putting the focus on me, taking the focus off of everybody else, putting it on me. What do I want? Like, doesn't mean that I don't show up for other people and have service commitments or whatever, but there was no balance. So what do I want? How can I take better care of myself? It felt so awkward, folks. I mean, going into the Goodwill, buying pants, and then showing up a meeting and everybody knowing that I'd bought like a new outfit. And then people would be like, that's a nice shirt. And I'd just be like, oh, they know I bought a new outfit. And it's like, and I didn't even know how to really dress myself. So probably some of my sort of style choices were like, I was trying to learn all that stuff. But it worked. It worked. I actually stopped wanting to be around people that were lame, mean to me, or were rude. And you know, when I stopped pleasing people, people weren't pleased. I started to peel away the people and all the people that were draining me. I was like, when someone said something that was sort of degrading or I was in a situation that wasn't that great, I'd be like, I could tell that I wasn't treating myself well because of the service, because I had been taking care of myself, because I said, you know what, let me get a car that isn't broke, that has air conditioning in it, that works, that when you push on the window, the power window, the window goes down. Let me just get one of those cars that works like a normal car. Let me get car insurance. Let me get health insurance. Let me go to the dentist. All of that stuff made me start to feel better. It was like I was doing things for myself. So I have about 10 minutes left. The reading today, Courage to Change. I used to think if I ever looked carefully at myself, my secret fears would be confirmed. I'd see that I am hopelessly flawed and unworthy. Al-Anon has shown me that if I face the effects of alcoholism by working the steps, this belief will fade away. I'll see the truth I've avoided in my own inner beauty. We have such wonderful literature. I am powerless to change the fact that alcoholism has affected my life. I can't go back, you guys, you know? It did happen, right? Only a power greater than myself can overcome the effects of this disease. I call upon the power for help with the second and third steps. These steps help me to trust that although the ground on which I stand may quiver, I will not fall, for I am held firmly by one whose will is not so easily overturned. Regardless of how shaky I may feel, I am saved. Such a spiritual foundation makes a truly searching and fearless moral inventory possible. Only when I risk taking a close look at myself can my fears give way to the truth. As a child of God, I am all I need to be, loving, lovable, and splendid. Today's reminder, today I will take some time to strengthen my relationship with my higher power. This will bring me closer to seeing the truth as my ally and recognizing my own inner loveliness. I now choose to rise above my personality problems to recognize the magnificence of my being. I am totally willing to learn to love myself. Louise L. Hay. That, to me, you guys, is the solution. That's where I'm going. Everything in Al-Anon, everything I do to show up for my recovery is that solution. Love. I do the steps. I do this work so that I can love me and love you. That's it. Because when I love me and love you, the suffering is gone. I'm serene. I can be happy whether the alcoholic is drinking or not. It's totally possible. So how do I get to a place where I can love myself and love you? I have to do the steps. Because the resentments and the fear and the shame and all that nonsense, all the sort of the noise in my head, that's in 4 and 5. That's what I can dump and share with another person, my sponsor, whoever it is, my higher power. When I did my 6 and 7, I wrote letters to my defects of character, the 7 deadly sins. It's in the literature. One of the member sharings or something says, I wrote thank you and goodbye letters to the 7 deadly sins. So I'd be like, thank you, pride, for keeping me, you know, helping me along the way, but now I need to say goodbye. And I wrote those letters. And one of the things that happened when I wrote those letters was the whole broken shame thing that I had about myself, I realized that everything I'd always been doing, the controlling behavior, the codependent, annoying, the snooping, whatever it was, all of my bad tools were just me trying to make myself feel okay and safe. It wasn't because I was inherently evil or dirty, you know, which is what that's what I thought I was. I'm like, I don't deserve the first line in the reading. It's like, I will find that I'm not lovable. Like if you really dig deep, you're going to find out, nope, you're screwed for life. Right. I'm not. So 4 and 5, I let go. 6 and 7, I'm able to like make peace with these defective character, and I'll act out tomorrow. I will act out on Wednesday. I will act out next weekend. It's okay. It's a process. But knowing that, like I'm saying, that tool is not great for me, maybe I can go to my higher power and say, is there something else? Maybe I can just get quiet and there's something else. And I went to 8 and I made a list with my sponsor. And some of the things my sponsor was like, no, You don't have to go back on that one. You already said sorry or whatever. And I continue to do eight-step lists and go back and make a nine-step. You know, I saw someone on social media and I was like, you know, maybe I need to talk to that person. I feel like we could have a conversation about, you know, how our relationship changed at one point. And, you know, I'm constantly looking how, because why? Because this, all of this stuff, the inventory, the surrendering to my higher power of my defects, the amends, all of that cleans out my head, makes me free to love myself and love you. Ultimately, that develops this relationship with a higher power that gives me the ability to be like, you're awesome, Gordy. 5 minutes. Or somebody just, I don't know, somebody went like this. Okay, five. Okay. I think it's like four, whatever. thank you. Thanks, Philo. So I do all that stuff. It's just like how the step said. I got to Al-Anon and my life was unmanageable. Completely. I was clueless inside, let alone everything around me, you know, like a train, practical train wreck. I go through 4 through 9. I talk to, and then I'm building, I'm getting all the stuff out so that I can be closer to my higher power and start to rely on my higher power for guidance, the ability to pause, have a filter, take care of myself, know what's good for me. I have to stay so close to my higher power to have that clarity. And when I'm like, I don't know if I should call that person back or I don't know what I should do, I can just wait and just do other things and let my higher power bring it to me. You know, I can slow down and be like, I don't know if I'm taking care of myself. I mean, I don't know if this is right for me, but I don't know if I'm running or I'm like scared or if this is on. If I don't know, I know that like I need to wait and just do simple things like, you know, brush my teeth, go to a meeting, you know, the obvious things that are in my path, and then more will be revealed. You know, and that is really, you know, and so I'm able to practice this stuff, offload it, then 10, 11, I'm actually able to pray and meditate and practice these principles and carry this message. And that's what it's all about. That's you know, ultimately that's where I'm going. I get rid of all the toxic feelings in my head and the anger towards everybody and I'm a victim and it's your fault. All that's junk. I get rid of that. I get into humility where I'm like, I am responsible for my choices. I'm 56. It's not anybody's fault anymore. I'm in charge. It's everything is my choice now. It's been like that for a while. If I'm feeling bad, it's always because of my choices. My choices. No one did anything to me anymore. And I have that clarity. So I get in that place after I'm able to like do inventory and all that. And then I get to this end, you know, where I'm actually able to care for other people. And that's really what I want, you know. I mean, I'm not, you know, it was really, I'm out of time pretty much. And I just, you know, I just want to say, you know, I'll just say this, you know, I said my brother died of a heroin dose. So I had like about, you know, I don't know, 8 years in the program or something like that at the time. And I thought, you know, I had a lot going on, you know, I'd worked the program and I knew a lot and I was sponsoring people and all that. But I realized that when I lost my brother, I still felt like I thought it was going to prevent him from not dying. That's not what Al-Anon is. It is for us. It is for me. I've been coming to Al-Anon always for Gordy. And I'm just going to continue to keep the focus on myself and keep trying to love myself because I deserve it. And that's what my higher power wants for me. And that's what the world wants for me. The world wants me to be happy and to take care of myself too. You know, thank you so much, everybody. Thank you.